What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Planeswalkers Anonymous. This week, I don't have a silly intro because we've got a lot to do. We don't really do a news segment anymore, but there are a few things I thought we should bring up, and after that, we've got a serious strategy metagame episode to do. So that's exciting. But first, I don't want to forget to mention Boardwalk. Donovan, I think Boardwalk is doing some interesting stuff coming this week, right?
Yeah, we're getting back to running events starting on Friday the 28th.
All right.
So we'll have Stan Beckman back. Then we're going to do Modern Mondays.
Okay.
Commander on Wednesdays.
Oh.
And Legacy Thursday.
All right. So you're bringing back like a whole host of tournaments and stuff. I thought you were just starting with just doing some FNM.
No. We want to service the community with different types of events.
Yeah.
And the only reason we're not doing our usual FNM where we have a bunch of stuff going at once is we don't want to have too many people in the store at once,
sure.
Which means if we're doing it on different nights, it's fine.
Okay, yeah, so you do a bunch of different events so that you can keep the numbers per event low and still have lots of different people who get to play Magic.
Exactly.
That sounds good.
That's the goal.
Sounds good. But it's what, standard for FNM, and then Modern on Mondays, Commander on Wednesdays, and when did you say Legacy is playing?
Thursday.
Awesome. I'm gonna try and get up there for probably just trying to make it to FNM this first time, but hey, I start putting that Legacy deck together. I actually have most of the pieces for my Legacy deck right now, but I don't have it built. Cool.
Well, if you want to play Standard, you may need to sign up now.
Oh. Yeah, I probably ought to, but also I don't have a deck for that right now either, so I'd hate to like take up a spot and then not have a deck, you know?
Yeah.
So I gotta fix
that. That's why you show up when you buy a Challenger deck. Hashtag plug.
Yeah. Actually, we were talking about that. I may just have to do that anyway. Standard cards. Because who plays Standard? Why do people play Standard, Donovan?
I play Standard. I like Standard. You get to play with the new cards. You don't get to play with the new cards in the other
formats. There's like at least one card from the new sets make it into Modern or Legacy at some point.
I said new cards. Plural.
Every once in a while, there's a set that like.
Wanted to play with Elite Spellbinder. I could keep playing Modern.
What, if you play Modern, you have to play with Elite Spellbinder. If you just
no, but if I want to play Strixhaven cards in Modern, Elite Spellbinder is the one I get to play with.
I'm pretty sure like all of Strixhaven is legal in Modern.
But none of it is good.
All right, we got to keep this ball rolling though. I did want to mention again though, like if you're local, you should come over to Boardwalk Games in North Dallas. We've got the address on our we don't have the address in our show notes. We're gonna have the address in the show notes and on our Patreon and stuff, so you should come check that out. Actually populate these. What is on your
sorry I don't think there's anything on my head. What are you talking about?
Okay, actually populate these events, and if you're not local, you can still participate at Boardwalk by getting all your singles and some other cool gaming supplies at boardwalk-games.com.
Yeah.
Did you start to say something?
No.
Oh, okay.
just agreed with you.
Awesome. And don't have a smooth transition here, so just moving on. another thing that I'm going to recommend to all of our listeners is to join us over on Patreon, which is a way you can more directly help out the show and actually, you know, like, help us pay for the hosting costs and for the packs that we open up every episode. Because every episode, we open up a pack of Magic cards, and at the end of the month, we're going to give them all away. That's actually next week, right, Domin?
Yeah.
Next week, we're going to announce our first winner. And so, this week, we'll take another quick look at everything.
Yeah, you should,
in that
after step. You open up the new pack for this week, you should do a perusal of all the highlights from this past month.
Yeah, we don't want to take too much time, so we'll just do the highlights.
Cool stuff.
You'll have to keep in mind there's a whole bunch of other stuff piled in there too, but we will talk about like the rares and stuff, and a lot of them are in Japanese, so we decided to add some English cards to this pile, and so we've got another draft pack this week. Donovan, like I said, I don't want to spend too much time here, but do you want to try and make a quick draft pick out of this pack after we take a look at what's in?
Yeah.
Just because it happens to be a draft pack. Alright, so we've got Biomathematician.
Okay.
Witherbloom Campus.
Alright, first pick.
Witherbloom Pledge Mage. Professor's Warning. Pillar Drop Rescuer. Curate. Windmill Slam. Dragon's Approach.
That's obviously, you gotta take all the Dragon's Approaches.
Obviously. Actually,
you get five.
Actually, a contender here. Mage Duel. That one's pretty. Crushing Disappointment. Another one that's actually worth considering, Spirit Summoning. We've got the Witherbloom Apprentice, Igneous Inspiration, Deadly Brew, and our Mystical Archive is an Infuriate.
That's just infuriating.
And our rare is Plarg, Dean of Chaos, or Augusta, Dean of Order. Yeah, that's actually a pretty cool card.
I might take the Plarg, but I think, honestly, the we had the 3-mana, 3-damage learn, right?
Yes, Igneous Inspiration.
Igneous Inspiration, yeah. I think that might be my pick.
Yeah? Yeah, I think I would probably go with the rare there, too. It's just, by an order of magnitude, the most powerful card out of the pack. Aside from that, I think that you're probably right. The Igneous Inspiration with having learn is probably the right pick, but I think
it's a reasonable removal spell with learn tacked onto it. So
yeah, I think it's probably right, but there's a good shot I would have taken Mage Duel though, because that's one that I have a lot of the time. Yeah, I think Igneous Inspiration is probably the right pick if we didn't have a pretty bomby rare in there, but that's a pretty good creature. It's not exactly a bomb. It's not going to come down and just win the game for you, but it's pretty powerful. And if you end up playing Lorehold, then you can play either side of it, which is nice flexibility. But speaking of highlights, let me through here and just pull a couple things out. Alright, so, like I said, this pack, probably the only like real highlight out of it, is this Plarg, Dean of Chaos double face card. And then, from the other packs that we opened up this month, we've got the Witherbloom art card with the signature on it, a Japanese Retriever Phoenix, and the Japanese Harmonize. And just moving backwards on packs, we've got a Velomachus Lorehold, a Japanese Dramatic Finale, a Japanese foil. What is this dude's name, Donovan?
Mavinda.
Man, I don't remember this card either. There's the Japanese green learn card.
Basic Conjuration.
Yeah, basic, not learn, lesson, right?
Yes.
Basic Conjuration, and we got the Japanese Mystical Archive, +3/+2. Is that Infuriate?
Also Infuriate.
Yeah.
Is that Infuriate?
I don't know, is it? Uh-huh. It's +3/+2.
Yes, that's Infuriate.
Alright.
I just didn't recognize the picture.
And we've got I think this is a learn card, right? It's
Sparring Regimen.
Yeah, Japanese Sparring Regimen. We've got a Beanstalk Giant in this pack. And, that's it. That was our lame pack, I think. And then, this...
I'm not going through a Retriever Phoenix, and it sounds pretty lame.
Oh, and that one, though, we at least got the, Japanese Mystical Archive and a cool art card. I like the art card. But then, our Collector Booster had a Foil Pestilent Cauldron, a Full Art... Not full art, an extended art Yadora Grave Gardener, a extended art Ifrit Flame Painter, a foil English Thrill of Possibility, a foil Japanese Mind's Desire, and a English Demonic Tutor Mystical Archive, as well as the Japanese Opt. So, all of that stuff we'll give away next week.
It'd be yours for the low, low price of filling out a survey.
Yeah, you can go over to our Patreon at patreon.com/planeswalkers, and anyone who's a member by next Monday when we record the episode will be automatically entered. And if you don't want to join us on Patreon, that's okay. You can still enter the giveaway by going over to our Patreon and checking out the Patreon description. There's a section that's just called About or About Us or something like that on there. And in there, where it's talking about how the giveaways work, you can find the link to take a little survey. It's going to ask for stuff like your address and things like that that we'll need to ship this stuff out to you. And also just, some questions that we're just going to use the fact that we got you over there taking the survey to help us out a bit. And that can get you into the drawing as well. But I think that covers it, Donovan?
Yeah, I think that covers it.
Fantastic. You want to tell me about this news stuff that happened this week?
News stuff happened this week?
Yeah, we got a banning.
I'm just kidding, yeah.
And that's really it as far as news goes, but there was one other thing I was going to mention.
Yeah, I think last week we talked a little bit about the MPL League having a whole bunch of people playing the Tainted Pack deck. I think we were kind of expecting a ban.
Yeah, you said you didn't really mind watching it, but it was pretty heavily populated with Tainted Pack.
Yeah, and so they went ahead and banned a card out of the deck. They banned the win condition Thassa's Oracle.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess they decided that being able to exile your whole deck wasn't really a problem if it didn't win you the game.
But they did leave Jace, so...
Yeah, I mean, people can still do the combo, it's just not good anymore.
Oh, okay. Alright, well, yeah, I'm actually disappointed to see Thassa's Oracle go, because I like that kind of alternate win condition.
Yeah, I think that that win condition was just particularly narrow on what types of interaction worked against it.
Yeah.
So I think it's reasonable to get rid of it.
Yeah, like creature removal? Pretty rough.
Creature removal does not stop that one.
But it's on a creature. How come creature removal doesn't stop it?
Because it didn't need to be in play to win you the game.
Oh, rough. Okay. Alright, fine. The only other news thing that I wanted to bring up this week, since we aren't doing our full news segment anymore, was we mentioned last week that they had a standard event last week or the week before or something like that that was supposed to be on Arena as a standard event, and then it started up and it was a historic event, and then a few hours later, it just got shut down and came back as a standard event, right?
Yeah.
And we were talking about, like, well, what was up with that? We still don't know what was up with that, why that happened or anything, but if you were signed up for the event and playing Historic, you got 4,000 gems just added to your account, and you got to keep any prizes that you'd already won. So that's cool.
Yeah, but that high-end competitive event, I think in-game gem seems a bit lame, but
yeah,
it's whatever.
I think that there's probably some amount of players who didn't end up playing the, like, standard event that did fire later on because of this problem. There's probably some number of players who that's true for, and it will be particularly suck for them. I kind of think anyone who really wanted to play in this event when it came back as a standard event and they played in that, I think that the 4,000 gems to make up for the inconvenience that they wasted some time playing a little historic is that bad.
Yeah, it's not too bad.
Because it's not like it cost them the standard event unless they didn't come back and play it.
Well, I mean, Joe, I just think anyone who was doing well in the historic event,
mm-hmm.
and then it just got canceled on them, like that sucks. Like, then they have to go back and hope they're just as good and lucky as they were before.
Yeah. Yeah, but also, it wasn't the right event. So, like, it's not like they were playing the deck they would have played and everything, you know? So,
yeah,
it's a completely different format.
True.
But I did want to bring up that update just because we had talked about it last week.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's it. I think we're ready to get into the main topic. But that's cool because this one should take us a little while. There's a lot to do here because we're going to talk about the Strixhaven metagame clock this week. And what's going on here is a few months ago, back before we took a hiatus from the show. We did an episode in our On the Shoulders of Giants series where I talk about old strategy articles and stuff about, like, whether I think that it's still relevant today or whether it's, like, just, you know, like, oh, keep in mind these fundamentals that you may not think about anymore. Whatever it is, it's this stuff that was written a long time ago, usually.
Like, all those articles Duncan read as kids to beat up on me at Magic.
But, like, yeah, the articles and stuff like that that people used to create, and people still do. People are still making articles today. It's just those good ones are, you know, like, that's what they're charging for you to get to see at, like, Channel Fireball Plus or Star City Games Premium or whatever. And so, like, you want those.
And, to be honest, very little of the articles that come out today are stuff beyond snapshots of what's going on right now.
Yeah. One of the last things we did before the show went on a hiatus was one of our Shoulders of Giants episodes where we talked about the metagame clock, and I should have... You said that was episode 55, right, Donovan?
Probably.
I should go and actually, like, drop that name again.
Leon Workman?
Yep, Leon Workman. Yeah, so, like, back in the year 2000, Leon Workman decided to publish this concept of the metagame clock, which is just a way to, like, visualize and help to understand the metagame, as if you picture each deck as existing at a particular position on this clock, then you know that generally decks, where a deck is on the clock, will be anything in the previous half of the clock. Well, going clockwise, previous in mind. And in the next half, going back around, counterclock. Damn, I can't keep that straight.
But I think, though, if I remember correctly, it was something that was about 15 minutes to half an hour previous to it on the clock. It was really good against things on either side of that in that previous half. We're not as poorly matched up against it. Like, you still were maybe favored, it's just not as strong a correlation.
Yeah, and part of what this is useful for is not only deck selection, but deck building. If you look at the metagame and say, like, oh, right now, everyone is playing, I don't know, Big Red is the deck. Everyone's playing Big mm-hmm. Red. What you can do is look 15 minutes ahead of that position on the clock. That's where you want to be to beat Big Red. And so if there's a deck there, play that deck. And if not, maybe you should see if you can build that deck that will exist in that position on the clock. So,
yeah,
because this comes with, like, a cool visual, and I think that it is helpful in understanding the metagame and making metagame decisions, and no one else is doing this, we decided that maybe every standard format we will fill out a metagame clock, and I can post the image that we decided the clock looks like right now on our Patreon and website and stuff, and people can go and check that out. And then you don't just have to listen to us and visualize this yourself, or, you know, try and work out what the metagame clock is every format. We'll do that. We'll put it out. It can be one of the things that we do regularly. And so I made that decision. That's my part. Now Donovan has to go and actually fill it out for us. So I'm going to turn it over to Donovan, and if, you know, my rambling hasn't completely melted his brain at this point, he'll start telling us about what decks are currently getting played in Standard and where they fit into our clock. And then when I post the episode, I'll have an image created.
Yeah, would you prefer for me to just go around the clock with the way I created it, or... Nope, that's not...
Whatever makes the most sense for you, man.
Well, I'll start off by saying I just... What I did is I went to MTG Goldfish and looked at their Standard metagame breakdown for, like, to pull what decks to go from, and then I checked MTG Top 8 to see if it had any decks listed on there as highly played that were not in the Goldfish breakdown, and I didn't see anything on Top 8 that wasn't in the Goldfish breakdown, so I just went with those decks. So I think what I may want to do is start with the most highly played deck.
Yeah.
And then move forward on the clock from there.
Okay.
And so according to Goldfish, at least, the most highly played deck is what they're calling Sultai Control, but I put it on our clock as Sultai Ramp because I do not hear anybody call that deck Sultai Control.
Okay.
I've heard it, people call it, like, Sultai Emerge and, like, Emergent Ultimatum Combo Deck and stuff like that, but I called it Sultai Ramp. And I put it in the clock at about the 10-minute mark because they're calling it a control deck and stuff,
mm-hmm.
but it's really not. It doesn't really control the game that much. It has a bunch of removal and has a few counter spells, but it's really just trying to survive long enough to play its combo.
Sure.
And its combo is cast Emergent Ultimatum.
Okay.
But it's got to ramp up to enough mana to do that.
Okay. So hopefully by the time anybody's listening to this, they'll be able to look at the image along with it that'll be linked in the show notes and everything. But for those of you who are just, like, listening in your car or whatever, you can't look at it right now, the clock starts at zero, and it goes around to 60 again at zero, so it's like a minute on the clock, I guess. I don't know. What are our numbers on? Are they seconds on the clock?
Minutes through a 30 through an hour.
Okay, so minutes through an hour. But
we're doing 1 hour.
Right. But, starting at 0, 0 to 15 is combo decks, and 15 to 30 is tempo, 30 to 45 is aggro, and 45 back to 0 is mid-range. And then the way I have the clock designed is basically the 0 to 30 is in the control area, and the 30 to 0 is combat. And I have that broken down that way because basically at the 15-minute mark is pretty strict, right in the middle between combo and tempo. But, like, that's where decks are when they're what people generally just call control decks, as they're right there in between combo and tempo.
Yeah, and so, like, this deck is leaning pretty heavily towards control, but I wouldn't put it quite in there at the 15-minute mark.
Yeah.
But moving forward, I figured I'd just start there, and I just moved forward through the clock.
Yeah, so as we go forward...
As we go forward, the deck's... I'm saying next is likely to have an advantage against the deck that we just said.
Right, sure.
Now, this one's not going very far forward, so your advantage wouldn't be heavy, but the next step forward would probably be, is it control?
Mm-hmm.
I believe Goldfish has it listed as Prismari control, but I'm a boomer, so I call it is it.
Boomer, right. I think they call us millennials now.
The magic boomer. I'm a paper boomer. I play paper magic. I don't play these arenas and motos.
Anyway, so we got that.
We got, is it control? Yeah, because I think this is just a control deck.
Sure.
They play some counter spells and removal spells and then have a big scary creature at the top end that they kill you with.
Right.
And they try to just disrupt you until they play their big scary thing and then protect their battleship.
Mm-hmm.
Is trying to win with, like, Goldspan Dragon and Galazeth Prismari. And then, leaning a little bit forward from there, I put at the 20-minute mark, I put Blue-Black Control. Just because, honestly, I just didn't want to just stack it on top of the Izzet deck.
Okay.
And it's kind of the same. I might have put it closer, like 16 or 17 or something like that.
Okay.
Yeah, it's kind of the same spot. It's a control deck. That one's not super popular, though. It's not, as far as I can tell, super good.
Okay.
But it was in the Goldfish breakdown, and I decided I'd just cut off at 2%. Anything that was played more than 2% of their breakdown, I'd include in the list.
Yeah, and that also breaks down as the top 10 decks.
Yeah. That's pretty good. Yeah, so it gave us a nice 10 decks to work with.
Mm-hmm.
And then going forward from there, the deck that I think is probably the best positioned one right now because is Dimir Rogues, because I got it at the 30-minute mark, and so I think as far as its relationship to Sultai Ramp, which is the most played deck, it's got the best spot.
Sure.
Because it's a tempo deck. That's what this deck is. There's some versions that play the Crab to mill your opponent out and stuff, but that's not always the case. But the point is, this deck gets an early threat, be it Ruin Crab or Thieves Guild Enforcer, and then just disrupts what you're doing until their creature can kill you.
Sure.
And the mill plan is surprisingly fast with that deck. So even if their early threat is the Ruin Crab, they can actually quite often mill you out, disrupt you until they can mill you out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the deck you've primarily been playing on Arena, right?
No, it is the deck that I've been playing on Arena whenever I want to play a good deck.
Oh, okay.
It's not the one I've been playing the most of.
Okay.
In Standard. In Standard, I've basically been on the mono white deck, but I've built my own version that has a pretty heavy green splash.
Sure.
But the mono white deck's on this clock, so maybe I should say that that's the deck I play the most. But I'm playing like my own homebrew version, so it's not the same deck that's on Goldfish. But then going forward from there, got mono red that I put in at like 37 because I wasn't trying to hit the 5-minute marks every time. I think I made that mistake with the blue black control deck, but
sure.
I put that one in at like 37 because this is just your classic aggro deck, the mono red deck.
Yeah,
it's got a few disruptive removal spells because like you can't be completely ignore your opponent.
Sure,
but they want to, you know. They want to just play threats and attack. And then after that, I put in a mono white deck at 43 because it's pretty close to just being a mid-range deck.
Okay.
And so it's got less removal and it's just got better, more efficient threats and a little bit more a little more of a top end than the mono red deck does.
Okay.
So I put it a little bit further on, and then... Sorry, I'm scrolling back and forth between the clock image and the list I put in the things.
You're all right.
And then we've got Rakdo Sacrifice, which is a mid-range deck, but they're pretty low to the ground. They play out some threats and try to have some resilient threats, but they're pretty low to the ground mid-range deck. So I put them at like 45.
Okay.
And then I've got Gruul Adventures, which is one of the decks that I think is one of the coolest decks in Standard right now, as far as the Tier 1 decks go. Mm-hmm. I just, playing with it, I haven't had much success, so I haven't played a lot of it yet.
Yeah.
But maybe I'll get some more practice with it. I put that one down at 50 minutes.
Okay.
It's because that one's just your classic mid-range deck. You've got big, clunky dudes with some removal to get themselves into the middle game and a little bit of things that mess with your opponent. But mostly it's just like, here's the biggest, baddest threats in Standard that aren't a million mana, you know?
Yeah. I wonder if one of the reasons why you haven't had success with that deck is the fact that it beats all these decks that we just mentioned, like the last few, but the first couple, the ones that you said were the most popular decks, land right on the other side of that like halfway cutoff.
It just it's real weak to the Sultai decks.
Yeah.
And so I try to play it, if I can, as aggressively as possible to kind of lean towards that aggro thing, because that's a thing you can kind of do with mid-range decks sometimes, is just play more aggressively and treat it like an aggro deck.
Yeah.
And then I'm less weak to the Sultai deck, but I still haven't had a lot of success.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, the stuff that is the most popular is, you know, that Sultai ramp deck, or people are trying to play the blue-red control deck to beat it a lot of times.
Yeah.
And those are just the best things to be playing against the Gruul deck, in my opinion.
Sure.
So the Gruul Adventures deck, or Gruul Midrange, depending on what you see it named as, generally the same deck. If somebody didn't put Adventures in the name, maybe they just didn't play one of the adventure creatures and they're only playing two of the adventure creatures, you know? Like, yeah. It's like, oh, I didn't put Edgewell Innkeeper in my deck, so I'm not an adventure deck. It's like, yeah, but you're still playing Lovestruck Beast, Bone Crusher Giant, and...
Sure.
So it's like, whatever. And then to finish off the clock here, I've got Right straddling the line between a mid-range deck and a combo deck, which I know I thought we should move... When we did the clock, we moved the zero mark back to between mid-range and combo, whereas before it was in between, I believe, combo and... or it was between mid-range and aggro before.
Yeah.
Just because I thought that was a more of a clear break point where you less often had those decks that were straddling the line between one or the other.
Mm-hmm.
But I really put, just right at that zero mark, I put Naya Adventures,
yeah.
Which, if you look at the flow thing with the high curve, that doesn't really fit that. The deck is pretty low to the ground on a curve,
mm-hmm.
But what the deck does is it plays some threats that just snowball really fast, but it doesn't actually, like, none of its individual cards are particularly threatening. I was gonna say strong, but they're strong, powerful cards. It's just they're not particularly threatening. It just plays things that snowball really fast. Like, there's a 2-mana 2/2 that says when you cast your second spell each turn, you make a 1/1.
Yeah.
And then it's playing adventure spells, and so that means they frequently have a high volume of spells they can cast. And then they play the Showdown of the Scalds, which is just gives them a bunch more fuel of spells to cast, and so it plays a bunch of things and snowballs into a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of feel like it plays kind of like a combo deck where you're just trying to go as quickly as possible.
Well, that's interesting. See, I was thinking that that 0 point would be like what I would describe as just like a straight up ramp deck would fit into there, because like the zero end of the mid-range decks is where it's got, the high mana curve, you know, so bigger stuff.
Yeah.
And, the 0 point of the combo part of the clock is combo generation spells, lots of stuff to help you get your combo pieces. And so,
Yeah, and I think that the reason I put this here is more because of that combo generation type thing. You're, they're trying to create a snowball effect, critical mass number of, threats on the battlefield all at once.
Sure.
But it's not trying to just play quick, efficient creatures like you would in an aggro deck.
Yeah.
And so I kind of put the feel of this deck right here at the kind of in the combo-y decks.
Sure.
But it's actually quite similar to the Gruul deck. They just added white for a little bit more.
Okay.
Snowball-y stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then on just above that at the 5-minute mark, I put Jeskai Cycling.
Sure.
Because they are, all about the combo.
Yeah. It can play sort of like an aggro deck a lot of the time, as you put some threats out there and get aggressive with them. but it is a combo deck. Like, every card is a combo.
I played this one mana 1/1 that combos with, I'm cycling all of these cards for +1/+1 counters on it.
Yeah.
And then you, like, oh, I cycled all these cards, here's a Zenith Flare.
Yep.
And this is, like, the most consistent at generating the combo deck in all of Standard for a long time. Because it's like, look, here's, you know, 40 cycling cards, or maybe, like, 45 cycling cards, plus 15 lands that I just had to play because, you know, you have to.
Yeah, you have to have some lands in it. I was like,
and I say 15 lands because there's a few lands with cycling in the deck, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's just like,
yeah,
that's where that deck's at.
Here's my Zenith Flare that combos with literally every other card in the deck.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, I think that fits. That is definitely plays like a combo deck, but it's certainly at, like, the very low end of combo. It's not, it has no protection
for its combo.
Right.
It's just trying to do its combo.
Yep, just generation, no protection. That's another thing I guess I should kind of mention real quick, is when I ran through the clock, said, like, from 0 to 15 was a combo, 15 to 30 is tempo, blah, blah, blah. And then there's, like, where it falls on that is determined by, like, in the 0 to 15 combo section, it lower on that scale is generation, as if you're trying to just get your combo pieces. Higher on that scale is protection. You're playing counter spells and stuff to make sure that your combo actually gets to happen, you know? And then that moves right over into tempo, which has disruption on the 15-minute end and threats on the 30-minute end. It's like, you know, the tempo is kind of a control/aggro deck. It's going to play threats and then try to protect them or mess up your stuff. And so it's got counter spells and discard spells and stuff, and it's got more of those, more on the control end. It's more like a combo deck that's trying to protect its combo. It gets up into that 15-minute end, and it's got more threats and stuff, more like an aggro deck. It's down towards the 30-minute, and going on around 30 to 45.
And honestly, this one's flow is kind of continuous all the way through the aggro section.
Yep.
Because really, the aggro deck is defined, it's, you know, it's trying to play those aggressive threats.
Mm-hmm.
But how much of an aggro deck it is defined by basically how many threats versus how much interaction it has.
Right.
Which we have listed here as threats versus removal.
Sure.
But that's kind of the same thing. It's like you just take that tempo strategy and just keep ramping up the number of threats that are in it.
Right.
Till you turn it into an aggro deck.
Mm-hmm.
And the aggro deck is like, all right, as you drop removal and keep adding more and more threats, you start heading towards a mid-range deck.
Yeah. And then the mid-range, going back from 45 to 0, it's really kind of ends up being a bit more of a catch-all for, like, everything else, really. But I, in concept, the mid-range deck is, you know, it's a little slower than an aggro deck because it's got more expensive cards that are either utility or just bigger and stronger. And it beats up on the aggro deck by saying, like, oh, I'm not as fast, and I don't hit as hard right at the beginning, but if I survive into the mid to late game, my cards are just better. That's like kind of what a mid-range deck is. And so if you have kind of a low curve, then you're down towards the 45-minute end of that if you're playing cheaper mid-range cards. And then the more expensive your cards get, the slower they are to come out and everything, the higher your curve, and the more closer to zero end of that scale you get, which is where I mentioned, like, if it's kind of like just a ramp deck, then you're like kind of playing a mid-range deck with a really high curve, where you got really expensive spells, and you got to get them with these ramp cards. But that's also kind of like that's where I say it's like kind of moving up the mid-range scales into the combo areas where ramp falls. And it's kind of like a mid-range deck that needs some combo pieces to actually get its spells off, you know?
Yeah.
So that's like a refresher on what the metagame clock is again, and kind of put our decks on there. We actually went through that a lot faster than I expected us to, Donovan. So, right now, we've got kind of a cluster of things happening around the 15-minute to 20-minute mark, right?
Yeah.
And then a few decks sort of populating around the rest of the clock there. So, given that, what do you recommend? What do you think this metagame clock suggests for what people should be playing right now?
I think they should probably be playing stuff around the 30-minute mark. So you want to be somewhere between a tempo and an aggro deck.
Okay.
Just because the tempo decks are going to be able to disrupt the combo decks or maybe stop the control decks from ever landing their threats.
Mm-hmm.
and the aggro decks are going to be able to punch in underneath all those things.
Yeah.
I think the mid-range decks, which sadly are some of my favorite decks, are kind of in the worst position right now.
Sure.
Because they're going to be just losing to all of the combo and control decks.
Right. And
so I think that blue-black rogues and like mono-red are kind of the best decks to be on.
Sure.
Because I think those are the ones that land the best in that spot. I think some of the stuff, like mono-white, is probably fine, but you start to push it to the point where it's starting to be kind of neutral as far as your metagame advantage over the most popular deck, because it's basically just the opposite side of the clock.
Right.
And then stuff like the Izzet control deck and the Dimir control deck are favored against stuff like the ramp deck that's the most popular, but they're going to be, but not dramatically.
And they're also susceptible to all the things that target the ramp deck more dramatically.
Correct.
Okay, cool. Well, what else do you want to add? I actually expected this to be a much longer episode. That's one of the reasons why I was rushing. Well, I didn't really end up rambling, but I was rushing through our news segment and everything. What else do we need to do, Donovan?
I think that's good. I
think we just have a short episode this week?
Yeah, I think that was the goal whenever we revamped the thing, was to have shorter episodes so you didn't have to spend 24 hours a week doing editing.
Yeah, that was the idea. This will be a really easy episode for me to get edited and posted in there, because we're still
under an hour. Yeah, it's not like you got distracted and started talking to people that aren't on the podcast and stuff in the middle of it that you have to edit out.
I mean, only if I want to. I just leave it in.
If I want to win, what deck do I play?
Dimir Rogues.
Dimir Rogues.
Dimir Rogues. And how much is that deck?
Sorry, I accidentally clicked off of Goldfish. Dimir Rogues. $178 in tabletop.
That's actually a
pretty budget deck.
Yeah, a lot of the cards are uncommons, in addition to the fact that they just released some of them in a Challenger deck, where you can get the deck for $30, and it's a approximation of this deck. It won't be quite as good, but you can get that as a starting point and then just upgrade it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just like, none of the cards that are in that deck can be horribly expensive.
Yeah. Well, Donovan, what do you think, if I wanted to build this deck, but just nix the Lurrus so that I can play, what's it called? Brazen Borrower. And what else do I get?
You can play Xerathan and Nighthawk Scavenger, I guess.
Because I don't necessarily think that the Lurrus is all that relevant, since you have to pay to put him in your hand now. And
I don't think it's important, but it's very good.
Well, it also makes the deck deeper and easier to put together.
That's true.
I'm going to guess there's not a copy of Lurrus in the Challenger deck, right?
No.
Alright, so if I just grab the Challenger deck, then I make the non-Lurrus version for like $20.
I don't know, presumably it's more expensive than that if...
Yeah, probably. I don't know, what lands are the Fabled Passages, Triumphs, big chunk of the price, biggest chunk of price, Agony, the biggest things that cost money.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think the Challenger deck's a good starting point for that, because it's got your Wind Robbers, your Soaring Thought Thieves, your Thieves Guild Enforcers, and it's got Drown in the Locks. Oh, doesn't have End of the Story. That's surprising. Oh, it's got two in the sideboard. That's really weird. Why are they in the deck? Like, what? I can understand them putting it not in the deck because they didn't want to include all the cards, but if it's in the deck, why is it not in the deck?
I don't know. That's so bad. Maybe the Future League thought that was the better version of that deck.
Part of the whole reason that deck's any good.
Those cards that get banned, right? I'm sure do those values drop or they increase?
Depends on why it got banned. A lot of the cards that got banned for being racist increased in value. because those cards weren't good, so nobody was playing them for them being good. So the notoriety they gained from being banned for being racist increased their value because no one wanted them before. So now the racist people want them.
Yeah.
And just, I guess, some people that are like, oh, I'm just collecting it because now it's a collectible.
Oh, man, Donovan. So, just in case this makes it into the episode.
Do we need to do the outro and stuff?
I mean, yeah, we will. I was just going to say, like I said, in case this makes it into the episode, I don't know at what point I've gone off or not here. Because, like, some of
that... We left the rails a long time ago.
Well, but some of what we were talking about the rogue deck might be valuable.
Yeah,
but
I agree.
Our listeners know that I've been reading tournament reports by Jamie Wakefield.
Do they know that?
Okay. Any of them that have been paying attention... to some of the like BS that we've said in a couple of previous episodes.
Yeah.
And one of the things that just made my mind explode was in one of his tournament reports, Jamie is talking about how he approaches buying cards and trading, and he's like, I know I'm weird and this isn't how most people approach the game, but I'm not actually interested in collecting the entire set. I just want the cards that are going to be good for tournaments, and so I try to focus on getting the cards that are the most powerful, and I'll have multiple copies of them, but I don't have any full sets. And like, that's not what most people do. I know, I'm crazy, but that's just what I'm focused on. It's just winning games. And I'm like, oh man, that's so weird. It's like nobody does full sets anymore.
And then whenever the game came out in 1994, when Jamie started playing, like, that's what people did, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh.
I know the game came out in 93. I was just saying in 94 when Jamie started
playing. Right. Yeah, it was close to when the game came out, and that is when he started playing. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I just thought that was a funny thing. And the other thing that I already mentioned to you, but as long as I'm talking about it on here, is one of his tournament reports. It's like this big tournament. It's like the Northeast Convention or something like that. And it's this big tournament. It's like double elimination with 10 rounds, and it lasts 2 days, and they're doing a bunch of stuff, right? And it's like the first big tournament that he won. And so he mentions in there that he went to collect his prize support, which hadn't come up the whole tournament. I've been following along. I've been investing, like, oh, man, it's a big tournament. Oh, exciting games. And like, yeah, this is great. Is he going to win it? Yes, he did win it. Ooh, awesome. And like, he went to collect his prizes, and it was 9 packs. It was 7 packs of Revised and 2 packs of Legends.
You know, people used to be in the game for the love of the game back in the day. It was a purer time.
But one of the funny things about that, I thought, was when I told you that, you're like, yeah, I'd play a tournament for 7 packs of Revised.
Exactly. Like $1,000 worth of Magic cards right there.
Right. That's probably it for an episode, though, Donovan. I know we could go on and BS about stuff for hours, but we'll do some more of this next week, and maybe sometime we'll actually talk about that book if I finish it and it's worth talking about. But
yeah.
In the meantime, if anyone wants to hear more of your thoughts about the metagame, Donovan, where can people find you?
Yeah, if you want to come find my thoughts about the metagame, maybe tell me I put Nye Adventures at the wrong place on the clock. I'm at Boardwalk Games in North Dallas, selling cardboard and running tournaments now. And you can also find me on Twitter at day_Donovan, or on Twitch at twitch.tv/dday_99, where I stream. Looks like I'm going to be streaming on Tuesday nights now.
Okay, cool. And if you want to ask me what I'm going to be playing in Standard...
I don't.
You can tweet at me at EngineWithin on Twitter, or you can email the podcast at planeswalkerspod@gmail.com. And also, visit our Patreon at patreon.com/planeswalkers to support the show and get in on those monthly giveaways. I'm still pretty excited to give away that, what was it, Demonic Tutor?
Yeah, the Mind's Desire is pretty sweet.
Yeah, too, that Japanese
foil. Isn't that a foil Japanese?
Yep.
Mind's Desire?
Yep, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Until next time, everyone. Good luck. Have fun.
There it is.
WUBRG Strixhaven. This is Jiren Naidu, broadcasting from the Prismari campus. We've got an exciting lineup of new and popular artists today, and I'm excited to share them with you. But before we begin, a message from Dean Lizette for our new Wizard Bloom first years.
Welcome to Strixhaven. Many of you are well prepared and have brought creatures from home. Others may be planning to purchase high quality pests from our on campus nurseries. However, if you do not yet have a subject handy, or don't want to spend your allowance on nursery-raised pests, the weekly Witherbloom Hunt for Specimens is an ideal way to stock up. Join us this Sunday and explore the marshes behind campus for some unique pest subjects. And remember, even if you already have all the pests you need, the Witherbloom Hunt for Specimens is a fantastic opportunity to learn.
Wow, pests. Okay. Sounds like those Witherbloom students are in for a treat. Next up, the Cross Multiverse musical styling of Nico Arif.
I think I'm ready to do this thing.
All right, I'm in.
Should I just begin?
Yeah, let's go.
Okay. What's up,
me?
Thanks. Thank you.
Yep.
But some of those older articles and stuff.
That... He's just a big fan.
No, it's cool. I'm. It's fine. It's cool for him to be here and everything. It's just now I feel like I know people listen to this. Like people listen to the show, so like it shouldn't bother me that somebody's listening. But at the same time, there isn't normally somebody listening when we're recording, you know? So now I'm like, oh no, someone's listening.
Aren't you guys in the same, aren't you guys like 5 feet away from each other?
Well, it's a little bit further than that, but yeah.
He's in the other room.
But the light's different.
Well, that's kind of what I meant, like, and you guys have your video on, which is great for me, right? That's fine, but.
Duncan thought it might be a cool thing to record and we can post it on our Patreon.
Yeah, maybe. I didn't the last episode.
I didn't know you were recording your screen, or else I wouldn't have hopped in.
Doesn't matter.
Duncan can blur your face.
If you want.
Yeah, but I mean, personally, like, I have a Christmas tree in the background.
So?
No one knows when we recorded this.
And no one knows who you are.
That's the point, though.
No, it says Shane.
Everyone's going to be like, who's the weird dude with the Christmas tree still up? No one's going to pay attention to what you guys are talking about.
Anyways, I think we have an ad to do to pay for our podcast.
Yeah.
All right, I'll talk after.
Oh, yeah. Donna, did you look over this ad?
No, I forgot it existed.
Do you want to take a look at it?
No.
No?
What is it about?
It's...
Please tell me. Trojan condoms.
No, it's...
No, they're not real ads. I was kidding about it paying for the podcast.
Yeah, our ads are a joke.
They're faux. They're faux ads.
Yeah, I write them.
So you piss off your audience on purpose?
Duncan... No, they're Magic Card themed.
Yeah, they're ads for Magic Cards.
I listen to your podcast every week.
Yeah.